Hi, and welcome to this week's VFX show, because this week we're talking about the film The Surrogates with Bruce Willis, a film that I first saw when I was driving around LA. It had some rather funky robot posters, and it's nothing that gets me into a sci-fi film more than some funky robots. I'm joined on the line from New York, actually, by Jason Diamond. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
So, Jason, you're at MBS Productions in New York, and it's the end of your day there right now.
4 o'clock, isn't that a half day?
Okay. It's certainly cocktail hour. It's actually a very early morning for me, so if I suddenly fall asleep, I only just got out of bed. David Strapinas, you need sleep, my friend. You're heading off to London, but you're still in LA?
I'm still in LA for another couple of weeks, and then heading off to London to work at Double Negative for a while.
I think DNEG's a great company. I've really, really respected their work, and they've certainly grown in leaps and bounds. Definitely the London scene, I think you're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the adventure. I'm going to miss my dog and my friends, but it should be a lot of fun. And, DNEG's a company I really, really respect, so I'm glad to be joining the team there.
Yes. Now, tell me, is Avatar going to open in London at the same time as LA?
Worldwide opening, December 18th. Go see it.
Excellent.
None of that matinee stuff either. You can, pay full price. Go see it in stereo. Bring your friends.
Bring your
Lots
friends,
of them.
Yes. Okay, so let's get started on the show. And I guess as we normally do, we'd like to just have a quick discussion about the film itself before we get into the visual effects, which is obviously going to be the main focus of our attention. And let's start with you, Jason. Was your kind of overriding sense of the film before you went to it?
I was actually really excited to see it because, like you said, mainly because of the posters. I was like, and I didn't have a chance to see any trailers or anything, and sometimes I like to stay away from seeing trailers anyway to just go in and be like blank about it. I was really excited, but it didn't fully reveal to me what I thought was going to be happening based on the posters.
And as just a straight movie going experience, did you enjoy the film?
It was well made. The story left a little something to be desired. I just think they sort of threw some things out there and then they didn't fully get realized and they didn't, I don't know. It just felt like there was a lot more information they wanted to do, but just were restricted by time.
What about you, David?
Yeah, it was there. It was certainly feature length, to quote, Michael Scott. it was totally 90 minutes long. It was a big pile of missed opportunities and there's so much more that could have been done with the concept that I was a little bit disappointed. And I actually, the biggest thing that annoyed me is, the whole concept of the fact that everyone's going to have a surrogate that looks really, really, really pretty. So you had tons and tons of models who were people who were cast for how they look, not how they can act. So I thought that a lot of the acting was decidedly
robotic,
subpar. Yeah, just like it's a good concept, and I think it actually is a lot that could be said about it. About how people live their lives online now. There's very Look at us. We're three separate cities. Obviously, from the background noise, Jason's in New York. I'm here in LA, and Mike, you're half a planet away. I've met all of you in person, but there's so many people I talk with every single day over Twitter or Facebook or email or what have you that I've never met in person. Yet I would actually consider them my friends. So there's a lot that can be said there. But the trouble with the film is they don't do enough with that concept or to explore that idea. And the whole idea of the surrogates themselves isn't really explored to the fullest. It's like everyone just has a version of their surrogate that's them but prettier. You do have that one, the big fat guy who's a woman. But, on the train they have that one little bit where, there's a guy who's like blue and there's some kind of punkish looking person next to him. How come no one has, a surrogate that is 8 feet tall and has 5 arms, or no one has a dolphin surrogate or whatever that would let them actually like kind of live life in a completely different way.
Right. Well, you know, you'd see like Yoda walking around and like, you know, Darth Vader or E.T.
but,
or something
like
that.
So just to argue the opposite point of view for a second, because I sort of agree with you. But anyway, the thing is, though, they're all made by this surrogate corporation, right? And one could argue that the surrogate corporation would not want to put out Yodas because they only offer, you know, people type ones. And so all you could do is change the people type ones through the cosmetic stuff.
Yeah, except for the fact that, you know, they're a corporation and they're there to make money. And if there's a demand, then people will, you know, and there would be a demand. I wouldn't want to necessarily have a surrogate that looked – I definitely wouldn't want a surrogate that looked just like me. Or even me, but prettier. You know, I'd want something completely different.
Well, I think here's my two problems with it, Mint, before we get onto the visual effects. My two problems are, one, there seemed to be no adequate explanation of children because there was a promo in there that said, oh, surrogates for kids. But having said that, people still needed to get together to make kids. And then point two is kids obviously change, you know, week to week, month to month, year to year. So would you be constantly updating surrogates for them? And if you didn't update surrogates for them, would there not be some nurturing instinct that would make a mother want to spend time with her child rather than her surrogate spend time with her child? But even if that happened, it's a very kind of complicated area to get around story-wise.
And there's so much, you know, there's so much that can be going into with the social implications of what if an adult can inhabit the body of a child, and what if they can do things that an adult would and are allowed to do, but in the body of a child, and what implications are there to that, and, you know, all sorts of like, really big ideas that could have gone into this that didn't.
It would have
made some for some great, you know, visual effect type stuff.
Sure. And the second problem I had with it is just drive around the streets of any city. There are different models of cars from different periods.
Exact analogy I was going to make.
Yeah, but the trouble with this one was everybody had version current release surrogate apart from the one in the corridor. That was, you know, she said, oh, mine's in at the shop and they give me this dodgy one. What we should have seen was a mixture of robots and surrogates, because quite frankly, if you could make a robot that good, then there'd be a bunch of menial tasks that you wouldn't require, you know, a high quality surrogate for, like the garbage collector. Why would you bother spending a fortune on a bunch of stuff? It would look like the robot one that was the woman in the hallway with the key. And so I would expect to see different vintage robots on the streets, not all of the exactly the same model and exactly the same level of professionalism and exactly the same level of polish.
And not only that, but you get into like just absolutely really stupid things that go on. Like if I'm a surrogate, if I'm controlling this human body with my brain, and I go and I get into, for some reason, a current model Prius. I don't know why all the cars were current models, but there are robots walking around. But you get into a car. Why would you have your mind control a robot that's then physically controlling the car? Like, wouldn't they just, your brain just drive the car? And why the heck would a robot pull out a USB stick to download information? Like, wouldn't he have, like, a USB stick that, like, comes out of his wrist that he can interface with a computer? Which, why is he interfacing with a computer with a mouse and a keyboard? There's, like, all this, like, logical things that weren't completely thought through. Like, if I had a surrogate and I'm walking around, I want my Twitter feed just floating across my eyeballs. Like, I want to be able to,
right,
to
where's
see,
the hood?
But, you know.
Where's the hood?
But not only that, but this whole idea that crime rate had plummeted. I mean, if you were not physically around and all you had to do was take the headset off to be away from the robot, then A, there'd be an enormous amount of accidental crime. Like somebody's driving a car and somebody walks into their room, they take their headset off, the robot freezes up, the car drives over and smashes in and causes a 16-lane pileup. And then the second thing is, wouldn't people just jack these things and use them for crimes because, hey, I don't have to be there. So if somebody shoots my surrogate as I'm trying to escape from the bank robbery, what do I care? So
you also, like, I thought that there's a scene in the movie where Bruce Willis beats up a robot, which I would think would do more damage to his hand, but
they made his hand look pretty meaty after that scene, though.
Yeah, not as much as it would have.
True.
But you know, the person's just sitting there laughing as their robot is getting beat up. It's like, and destroyed. And it's like, if somebody went out and was kicking the crap out of my car, I wouldn't sit there laughing going, ha ha, you're destroying my property. You know, it's you would get upset, like,
okay,
dude.
Again, he was on drugs, right? So maybe he was like just loony. But let me just say this, though. My problem congeals down to, it was the attack of the beautiful people. What they wanted or seemed to want is a world of beautiful people. And so anything that didn't fit into making it the world of beautiful people, which made it the Stepford Wives on acid, then just didn't fall into the realm of what would happen in the plot. So older models, children, bad people, you know, all of the stuff that would stop you from just having beautiful surrogates walking around was somehow excluded. Now, if I was reading this as a book, I'd probably just at some point say, well, this is an interesting premise. I'm just going to buy into it, or I'm going to stop reading. And I've done that with Asimov stories, the, you know, really kind of interesting stories that, and at some point I could argue them, the validity of them or whatever, but I just mean, you know what, this is the ride I'm going to go on, so I'll just go along for this ride and explore it. So my criticism, therefore, would be A, the beautiful people, and B, as you said, David, I think they could have explored that world more. If I was going to buy the ride and be along for the journey, then maybe we could have explored that world a little more, and it would have been more rewarding if they'd done that.
The biggest problem I have is it's a fantastic, fantastic concept. Like, it is a mind-blowingly great concept, and what you could do with it is so, so great. And it was squandered, you know? It's like, because, like, once somebody has that idea that is so unique, no one else can do it really without, you know, kind of like re-owning it in some completely novel way.
Oh, trust me, someone's going to reimagine this in 10 years' time.
Well, this was also, I was just going to say, it to me, it felt like sort of a retake on the Kilgore Trout story in Kurt Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions called Now It Can Be Told, where a guy gets a letter from God that tells him that he is the only human with free will on the planet, and everyone else is a sex robot, hospital robot, taxi driver robot, and he just goes insane. And it's sort of like a similar concept to that, with the Bruce Willis character being the, in essence, the only, as they say, meatbag walking around outside of the reservation.
It's you know, you also have, you know, you could see this as a kind of spin on some of the ideas that were in Blade Runner. You could see this as a spin on some of the ideas that were in Gamer.
And iRobot.
And in iRobot. And it's, you know, there's a lot of the same ideas. But to me, the idea of you know, also the Matrix, you know, and there's some very similar things that they did actually better in the Matrix, like when you had people walking through the crowds, they had twins and triplets in the crowd, so that, you know, because the idea is that if it's a computer and it's simulating people, it's going to reuse a certain model, you know, it hadn't upgraded to the latest version of Massive or whatever, and had just you know, a limited population it could pull from.
But listen, I think we should move now from the surrogates issues that we might have with Jonathan Mostow, who's directed it, the director of Terminator 3, because, I mean, I'd put anything like that at his feet, over to the visual effects headed by Mark Stetson. Because if I can separate those two things for a second, I thought there were some very interesting visual effects in the film, and I'd hate to spend the whole show just talking about what could have been from the plot. Because as we often discuss in the past, you know, we don't actually know the backstory of why things went the way that they did. So can we flip gears, and can I get your opinions on the visual effects, starting with you, Jason?
In a global sense, I thought they were good, but I didn't really like the look of the film. But it had this weird mix of wanting to be grainy, but also really diffuse and sort of soft. And I know they tried to do that. I'm assuming they tried to do that because of the way the surrogates were supposed to be all glossy and robotic. Made everything look really cheap to me in a larger sense, in a global sense. Not on a per effect basis, but you know what I mean?
You mean, like, are you going as far as discussing that in terms of the grade?
Yeah, I'm saying the grade.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
The grade, which obviously overall affects the visual effect. So it just looked really cheap to me, like sort of like a B movie almost, in terms of the diffusion sort of washed everything out, but then they had this grain that was clearly a choice. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not being
No. I understand what you're saying. I mean, it wanted to be a detective film, and it wanted to be a little bit of, you know, District 9 in the non-robot zones, and then it was very much,
I was a little,
you
know, confused.
Plastic people who want to be your perfect pal. Maybe it was the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation that was behind this. David, what do you think?
Some of it was really good. Some of it was okay. And there's, I think, the single worst visual effects shot I've seen this summer in this film.
Which was?
There's a shot where they, Bruce Willis and his female companion, who I can't remember
Radha,
her name.
Radha Mitchell.
Yeah, go into an elevator, and it's supposed
to
be...
Oh, yeah. That was terrible, wasn't it? The elevator shot.
That was horrible, and you know, my guess is that had to be a last-minute type thing or what have you, but I was severely, severely disappointed in that shot. But I thought that the youngifying of the older characters, we need to come up with a term for it, but the Lola effect, even though it wasn't done by Lola, but the...
Well, let's call it the youthification.
Okay, the youthification was a little bit distracting, especially on Boris Kojo or whatever, the guy who was playing the kind of jerk FBI commander. He was like, it was overly, it looked like kind of they had done like a mask and then like a Gaussian blur over it, that a lot of the details that give the form of a face were kind of lost in that. Like, I don't know whether I was being over analytical because, you know, I'm a visual effects guy and I can see that, or if the, like, everyone, like, that was as it, because it didn't look young. And they didn't look synthetic. It just looked like
soft.
That part of the screen was blurry. Yeah, it was not as effective as I would hope.
Well, let's discuss the complexity of doing that before we get into the details of how they did it. Because the problem is, you need an effect that basically says this is fake, but doesn't look fake. You need an effect that basically de-ages somebody. But the actor isn't trying to give a true performance through that visual effect. So I want Bruce Willis's surrogate to not give a believable human performance, because I have to believe it's a robot at this point. And yet, so I mean, like, when we cut to Bruce Willis, who's got to be in his 60s, I guess, he was obviously looking more haggard, more everything, where we wanted a Bruce Willis circa, I don't know, him maybe 25, 30. So there's a big age jump there. There's quite a lot of effect shots to do. I mean, hundreds of them. And we need it to look sort of, as I say, plastic or fake, but not a bad visual effect. So it's, I actually think, one of the worst possible categories of visual effects to tackle. You know, it's the, we want it to look fake, but good fake. And I think that's a really hard thing to go for.
Well, my problem with it was, is that it was done only to certain actors. You know, when you had a whole bunch of pretty people on the screen, they didn't do it because they didn't need it done to them.
Okay, so, I'm with you. So it made that Bruce Willis's character stand out in an unplot-related way.
You know, if they'd done the exact same effect to even the you know, genetically gifted actors who populated the film and gave everyone that same kind of artificial sheen, then it would have been like, okay, that's how the surrogates look. But it was kind of like, I guess Bruce Willis left his in the, you know, polisher a little bit too long that morning or what have you. It just didn't quite work for me.
There was also something going on in his lip. His upper lip was like really, it was huge. It was like really puffy. But I was, as you said that, David, you said that thing about the elevator. I was just looking at the notes that I scribbled in the theater, and like in bold letters, it was like, elevator, what the hell? You know, like, and all, and actually anything that had to do with a background replacement where there should be a window had no reflection. None of them in the entire movie. Like, when they're driving in the cars, nothing. It drove me bananas.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's tackle these one at a time, because I totally agree with you. The elevator shot was not good. We've seen really good anti-aging in the X-Men film. I thought the anti-aging at the end of Wolverine wasn't good. And the anti-aging that I did like at the beginning of X-Men was done by Lola. Anyway, the companies that ended up getting involved in this, Synthespian, I can't even say that well.
Synthespian.
Synthespian, thank you, Studios. Now, that's a pretty interesting company right there. And then a bunch of stuff was done by MPC Vancouver. And then there were other companies involved, including, in a smaller capacity, ILM, who came in for the chase sequence, which I think was a really late ad. So let's get back to the Synthespian Studios. So have you guys know the company? It's been around for about 5-6 years, I think now.
It's kind of an evolution of, you know, it's Jeff Kleiser's company, which used to be Kleiser Walczak, and before that, I think they were called Mass Effects, or something along those lines. But I mean, Jeff Kleiser has been on a multi-decade kind of push towards a digital actor. You know, this has been what he's been moving towards his entire career. I mean, he's one of those people that, like, if you are really a nerd into computer graphics, you'll probably know of him. You know, it's like you can mention someone like Dennis Muren, and possibly someone who's just a fan of film will know who Dennis Muren is. But you mention Robert Abel, and they won't know. But if you talk to a real hardcore computer nerd, then they'll know who Robert Abel is.
Robert Abel and Associates is exactly the same pedigree as these guys. And in fact, it's from way back then that they came up with the term for that video that was part of the animation festival at SIDGRAPH, the Nesta Sextone for President, Cynthian Actors Guild. You know, basically it was a very early CG character complaining at a podium in a Arnold Schwarzenegger posing costume that they wanted all synthetic parts to go to synthetic actors and stuff. And that's where the name of the company comes from. So you're absolutely right. Incredibly long pedigree of working towards synthetic actors and a very, very experienced team of individuals.
They're located in Massachusetts, so they're a little bit off the radar. But they do... You know, they've done work on a lot of films, and they do it very quietly. I look at them a lot like Tippett Studios. You know, Phil Tippett, mm-hmm. his dream was to have an animation studio in Berkeley, California. He has an animation studio in Berkeley, California. He's content and happy with that, and, you know, they do fantastic work, but they don't try to grow above and beyond what they want to be. And, you know, Jeff Kleiser has this idea of, you know, he wants to build a artificial actor, and he's been drumming away at it in Massachusetts, where he wants to live for years and years and years, and, you know, more power to him.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a bunch of stuff. They, in fact, they've done work in X3 and Fantastic Four. And yes, and Jeff's actually a member of the Academy. So these are all, and I think he's actually, isn't he on the board of directors of the VFE, the VES?
He's a VES board member. And, you know, the work they did with that, they did the loner robot, you know, the building manager. That was really effective work. You know, that was, the design was different, but it was as good as anything in iRobot. So, you know, I can't fault them that at all.
Do you want to discuss how that was done?
Yeah, I like the loner robot. I thought was really nice.
I was interested to see how they did that. They actually had an actress standing there turning and doing the performance. They obviously gave the eyeline and everything else, and they sort of digitally removed parts of her body, replacing it with the background. So you had the right geometry and the right gravity and the right spatial relationships between all of the limbs. All the actors were reacting to somebody, and then literally by stripping away and revealing the background and obviously adding some CG where the neck and stuff was, you end up with a disembodied face effectively that's got a good performance, but also it's got all the right physics because it's moving and interacting. In a sense, to use an analogy, you just are painting back to the background, thus reducing the form or the body or the physical space that the body would occupy down to the skeleton that the robot has, because the robot really is a skeleton, just, you know, holding a face out there. And when I was in the cinema, I thought it was really, really effective. I looked at the hands and thought that they looked like gloves, and I guess they were, but I really didn't dislike the shot at all. I thought it was actually very effective, and I would have liked a whole lot more of that in the film.
Yeah, I was hoping that there would be a lot more of that. Thus, my whole issue with loving the posters and seeing nothing along those lines in the movie. I thought the film would have a lot more sort of intermediate surrogate human, or, you know, like seeing the spine on one or something that would make it more obvious the way that they had it in the posters. I thought the mannequin or the loner robot was awesome.
There were actually mannequins in the offices of the corporation when they went there. I think we were in the kind of a meeting room area, and there were some ones in tubes, and I had all sorts of quick expectations that these might come to life and play a significant role later in the film because of the posters and because they looked so interesting, but we never got them to play.
Yeah.
So we agree that work is really great. the face work was done, as best I understand it, because I don't think Disney has really published or allowed to be published details on the face up at minute level, but it was pretty much done in shake from a compositing point of view. And the pipeline preceding that was to scan the actors' faces and produce younger digital synthetic faces for, say, Bruce Willis. And then they would take texture maps from the lighting on the day and use those to apply to the model, which the model, of course, had like the classic, you know, smaller ears, smaller nose, which might explain the lip, by the way.
Exactly.
And that face was then using 3D tracking mapped to where the body was. And then in some cases, I think those shots were actually handed over to MPC Vancouver for comping. But the live action skin as a texture map on the digital face or partial face, and then just a bunch of shake work to make it work. I think in doing that, again, there's this whole line about how much they look fake. And apparently Mark Stetson really spent a lot of time trying to pick that level. Like he would actually do things where he'd say, you know, that's gone too far, it's too fake, too plasticky, and they'd kind of wind it back and add more realistic skin texture. Otherwise, I think they described it as looking like the boiled chicken effect, where it just looked completely wrong. I think it was a very ambitious attempt at a lot of shots, because in total there was like hundreds and hundreds of shots. There are actually 800 visual effects shots in the film, of which, well, did it feel like an 800 effect shot to you, David?
Yeah, that felt about right. I mean, it wasn't an overly long movie, and it was cut in a very traditional manner, rather than, you know, the we have 5 minutes, let's get 5,000 cuts in there thing that you sometimes see going on. So, you know, I would guess that there's probably only about 1,800 shots in the whole film. And, you know, saying about half those are effect shots, that makes sense. And because of a lot of the production design, you didn't need a lot of digital set extensions. You know, there's a lot of, you know, very tight spaces and corridors and that kind of thing going on. So
we did get a glimpse of the factory, right? The VSI surrogate factory.
Yeah, there's that one door opening, and it has the iRobot style factory shot.
Again, I thought if you'd gone to all that trouble to build that, you might have done something with it. Do you feel like you wanted to see more of that kind of stuff, or were you happy with those confined spaces, David?
I was happy-ish, I guess, with the confined spaces. It was again, like a lot of lost opportunity, and you know, the idea of why would you live if you can put your body anywhere? Why would you have it in a location that is so easily accessible or so traditional? You know, why wouldn't you have a weird like nutrient share? Or, you know, there's lots more stuff that could have been done. And also the biggest problem I had with the confined spaces was, you know, we have robots walking around, and yet everything else in the world seems, you know, still today. And nothing else seems to have made any kind of technological leap forward.
Was that in that, like, the civilization seemed to be exactly the same? Like, some guy's in his chair, but he's a janitor, moving a janitor robot somewhere? Like,
if you could afford this really expensive. Yeah, but we're getting back to the plot. So,
what I mean is, like, is if you look at something like Minority Report. Minority Report is a very recognizable environment. You know, it's like, okay, this is an apartment, this is a house, this is a store, this is a subway station.
But the cars got advanced with the other advances in technologies, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah,
this is more like an alternate reality than a 50 years in the future kind of thing.
Yeah, it's
gave us that timeline at the beginning, so they were really setting it up that it was an extension of now.
But I think
extension of now, but
agreeing with you, right? Like I'm saying, like they made it like there'd been advances in technology based. It wasn't an alternate reality, and yet we didn't see advances in Priuses. We didn't see advances in a whole lot of other stuff.
Yeah, well, four years ago, a big screen TV was like a 26-inch. You know, flat panel TV. That was like anything above that, you were like, oh my god, look at Mr. Moneybags over here with the big screen TV. And now, you know, even with the economy the way it is, you have, you know, 22-year-old people who are fresh out of college who have a 52-inch plasma on their wall, because that's only like three paychecks worth, and it's like, okay, well, that's, I can manage that. You know, that's only a car permit.
But we're still getting back to the plot. I really want to, because I really like the visual effects of some of the other areas.
What I'm going forward to, though, is that when you had them sitting in the chair and you had the little video screen, why wouldn't that be holographic or whatever? There could have been so much more that could have been done with visual effects in this film to really sell the futureness of it that I don't understand why it wasn't done. But I don't think that youngification effect is at a plug-and-play point yet. You know, we have certain technologies that you don't think about. It's like, oh, okay, we need to do a digital set extension. Okay, whatever. You know, oh, we need to put some fighter jets in the air. Whatever. You know, here's our catalog. Pick the jet, and we'll put them in there. No problem.
The anti-aging stuff really is still able to be quite noticeable and take you out of the film.
Yeah, like in Benjamin Button, which I think is the most effective use of that technology to this day. You know, yeah, when Brad Pitt steps out into the light in that one shot, it's a very gasp moment, but you don't go gasp, holy crap, that looks bad. It's gasp, holy cow, he looks like he did 20 years ago. And same thing with Kate Blanchett, thank you. When she's there in all the scenes as a dancer.
Okay, but what's happening in this conversation with us right now is exactly what I think is miserable in the film, which is that everything you're saying I'm not disagreeing with, but it's that this is completely dominating your thought about the film. Like, in other words, it's the visual effect, the thing that everyone is going to focus on. And yet, for example, I thought that the end sequence when they all got disabled and all kind of collapsed down, which was completely nothing to do with the anti-aging stuff, all done, I'm pretty right by saying Sandbox. Oh, no, it was Brickyard, I think. And some of their work, we're not even going to get to discussing at this rate because we're never going to get past Bruce Willis's face. And I think that's a real shame because some of the footage... for example, the helicopter crash, yeah? The helicopter crash, which was executed by MPC, I thought was really well done. So
yeah, it looked realistic. It looked like they crashed an actual helicopter. And I liked the Bruce Willis missing an arm. I thought that was handled really, really well too.
When he was running through the reservation, you know, falling apart and getting knocked around, I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I thought that was very effective.
Digital double.
Like, there was a lot of shots contributed by those other companies we're not discussing yet, Sandbox, Brickyard, and to a certain extent, ILM, which I mentioned earlier with the running on the bus. So let's discuss those sequences, and because I would really hate that we just skipped over that because we couldn't get past Bruce Willis's face. But I do actually think that is going to be something that happens to the general public. So what about the end sequence, the deactivation, the whole world stops, everyone sort of steps out on their porches and looks sequence? It was sort of the climax of the film.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the film. And everything just sort of stopped and you had a couple car wrecks and I was hoping to see a plane fall out of the sky in the distance, but just to sell that larger thing, although that would ask the question of why would they have robots flying a plane necessarily for that problem, but visually it would have been nice. I thought it was perfectly handled. I didn't really have a problem with it. Everybody just falls down, done. It's exactly what needs to happen. Just a little switch off, finito.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done. I thought it was something that I had seen that in the trailer, unlike you, so I was sort of expecting that was going to be much more of a setup for the film that... because again, I didn't really know what the plot was, so I imagined... I think I'd only seen part of the trailer coming in late to another film, so I sort of imagined that it was going to be a Twilight episode where, you know, suddenly everybody falls over and we discover that everyone but Bruce Willis is a surrogate, or rather, for some reason, you know, that was going to happen much earlier.
That would be much better.
But I did think it was really well handled. David, I think you said just a second ago that you thought the helicopter crash sequence, I mean, that had that whole sequence, including the arm coming off and the chase sequence, which is something I normally have a big problem with, which is breaking the laws of physics for the running sequence where Bruce Willis's surrogate manages to leap over small buildings in a single bound. It was working for me. I didn't really feel like it was Hulk type hopping.
Yeah, I mean, it worked really well. It was very reminiscent, I thought, of iRobot. But yeah, the crash itself and everything afterwards, it was a good mix of 3D work and 2D work. I thought it worked really, really well.
That all, to me, was absolutely terrific. I guess what I'm heading to here is that there is some really nice visual effects work in here. And as we have done, it's really hard to get past Bruce Willis's face. Oh, I guess the only thing is, I touched on it before, we didn't get back to the ILM bus sequence. And that was a sequence that, for me, didn't work as well as the Bruce Willis chase sequence. Because I thought that the Bruce Willis chase sequence, I kind of felt like it was a believable leaping up onto the next sort of level of the robot's got more powers than a human. But when we got to the ILM chase sequence, it suddenly felt like this part of the story, the visual effects were so amped up, maybe because the studio wanted an action chase sequence, that the leaping from buses to buses, I was starting to, why didn't they skid off the top of them? It was unbelievably pushed too far. Did anybody else, Jason, did you buy that with me?
No, I'm with you. I think also there was some weird motion blur stuff going on with that too. Yeah. Like they were just like, hey, look how quote unquote fast she's going to go. You know, like it was too like Spider-Man.
It was Spider-Man, yeah.
And didn't work like, in Spider-Man. It's not going to work here either.
I could believe that a cop would have enhanced ability for chasing. That would make sense to me. They were even alluded to it with the night vision thing earlier. So Bruce Willis's chase felt like a believable kind of step up that you would give to a law enforcement officer.
Totally.
But her stuff was like, wow, if everybody could do this, why the heck isn't everybody doing this?
Well, she was also a law enforcement officer, so...
Yeah, but it was... Did you not have a believability problem with her ability to jump from moving bus to moving bus?
No, I absolutely had a huge believability problem, but I don't lay at the fault of the effects artist. That's something I definitely lay at the feet of the director, because I can just feel in my bones sitting in a darkened suite and hearing the director going, yeah, just faster, faster, faster. You know, it's something that always happens where you have you know, visual effects artists who are, you know, they do what is correct and looks great and realistic. And then you have, you know, other creatives coming in and wanting to push it more towards what's the vision in their head. And that's, you know, it's more than justified. But it did, I think, look a little bit ridiculous. It felt very much like Spider-Man, like actually it felt a little bit like The Mummy type things where, you know, whether it's Mummy 1 and 2 by ILM or Mummy 3 done by Digital Domain, where you can really feel the hand of the director and the performance of the digital character. And that just felt overly fast and
okay, but exactly, overly fast. And also, I didn't feel like there was a momentum weight thing solved. I felt Bruce Willis climbing in the chase run sequence had a weight to him. Even, you know, with the one arm thing notwithstanding, he still sort of landed and moved. But the bus thing,
the biggest problem is if you have, I don't know what a surrogate would weigh, but, you know, probably more than a human, you know, probably a good 600-700 pounds maybe, and you had it jumping 25 feet in the air and then landing on top of a bus, the bus is going to cave in a lot more than it did. And if it's moving forward, you know, underneath you, you might either tumble over. There's a lot of like that. Just it didn't feel right.
Yeah. And it definitely felt like they were suddenly able to have superhuman powers as opposed to robotically enhanced powers that we'd have set up at that point in the story. Yeah. Just in fairness to the companies we've mentioned, because we've listed them, it's possible because of that whole chase sequence came in late. I'm also got it on fairly reliable info, I think, that there was a bunch of shots handled by a small assembled team that was basically like at the post-production offices of the production company. So the shots that we haven't identified who they did, for example, the elevator scene we didn't like, perhaps that is attributable to none of the companies we've mentioned. That's why I mentioned that, because I don't want to... You know, we obviously hated that shot so badly. We don't know who did it, but it quite is quite possible that it wasn't from a established effects house, but actually was like one of those, you know, those often a unit set up to just handle like a bunch of shots.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been something as a post-viz type effect that then just like, you know, it's good enough and we'll final it, or even a comp done, you know, by the editor. I have seen that done too. But that's kind of the interesting thing about this movie is, you know, there are effects companies that aren't in Los Angeles, that aren't in London, that aren't in Wellington or Vancouver. You know, you had a lot of houses in Massachusetts with Sandbox and Brickyard, even though, you know, to be fair, Brickyard does have offices here in LA, but, you know, that there are little companies all around the world that do visual effects and you know, they can step up to the plate and do quite a good job. And
I mean, if we'd had a lot more work from Synthespian Studios on the robot in the hallway type stuff, and if we'd had more stuff from Sandbox and Brickyard, and for that matter MPC and that amazing helicopter crash sequence, I'd be giving this, you know, major thumbs up on the visual effects work.
Yeah, I think they tried to be a little too the filmmakers tried to be a little too understated about how well, look how well the surrogates and everything, it's just like normal life, just a little different. You know what I mean? Like it seemed like it needed to be opened up a little more thematically, like we're saying, about showing a couple more maybe different robot styles, some other more menial task robots and things like that.
I don't think we've actually discussed, have we, other than maybe the bus sequence and then this whole Bruce Willis face, anything that we really didn't like other than maybe the odd shot with an elevator. So as I started out the show by saying, I personally think that there were some really, really good visual effects in here, and I'd like to have seen more of those amped up. The trouble is I'm never going to get past Bruce Willis's face, I think, for wanting to not buy the DVD or the Blu-ray. So it's not a film that I'm going to cherish.
I don't know if I'm going to quote Roper, the film critic here, who he's reviewing the film White Chicks. And, you know, the first time that the Wayans brothers came out in their white girl makeup, someone should have said, okay, I guess we're not making this movie. And, you know, it would have been nice if they had, the first time they had seen that youngifying effect, like that needed just a little bit more time in the oven, I think, to really hold up. So it's a shame that one bad little thing can distract you from all the other nice work that's in the film.
Because quite frankly, if they had amped up those other effects and Bruce Willis had been someone other than a young Bruce Willis, it'd probably be a considerably more interesting film. So the only reason why it was a young Bruce Willis, because it's a cute cinema trick to have a young version of an older actor, and that they imagined, I'm sure, at the pre-production meeting, that this would be a good hook for attracting people to the film.
You don't give, you know, Bruce Willis his multi-million dollar payday and not see his face on screen.
Exactly.
I would say, well, that say that, right, but you know, that was some of the supporting cast were pretty bloody good and they weren't seen very much,
right? But you know, it's
James
very
Cromwell
similar.
Could have had a bit more screen time. I'd have been quite happy with that.
Yeah, but it's very similar to like when like in 24, when, you know, Kiefer Sutherland comes back from wherever hellhole he's been put in during the summer, and he has a beard. And the first thing they always do is they have him shave his beard because, you know, we're not paying Kiefer Sutherland, you know, so that people have to look at him with a beard. We want to see Kiefer Sutherland's face.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying that they made a choice to go for a visual effect because presumably they thought it would give it more box office punch.
Right, but
you're saying it's only because they wanted to see Bruce Willis play Bruce Willis because they wanted more Bruce Willis, and I understand that that's probably true as well. But I think it would have made a better film if they hadn't.
I think the interesting thing is how, you know, Quentin Tarantino has announced, you know, that he's going to be doing Kill Bill 3. And, you know, he had the ideas for Kill Bill 3 back when they were doing Kill Bill 1 and 2, which was originally just Kill Bill. And he filmed scenes with the actors then that he knows will be used in the movie. So they're not going to have to do any youngifying effect. They're just going to use the old footage. It'll be interesting to see how people react to that compared to – it's very similar also to the Harry Potter films where they do flashbacks to stuff that's earlier, and it's like, well, that looks just like young Daniel Radcliffe because it is young Daniel Radcliffe.
Have that option though, unfortunately.
You know, you don't always have that option, but it would have been more interesting. You know, I think we're going to see points where – similar to how they handled Brandon Lee in The Crow after he unfortunately, you know, got injured and died, where they took, you know, Brandon Lee from one scene and they put him into another by, you know, I think you're going to see, you know, possibly taking Bruce Willis from Die Hard or Moonlighting and putting him into a modern movie, you know, thinking a little bit more outside the box as to how you get your source material. You know, look at what they did with Terminator in, or Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 4, where they went back to the original life cast that they made way back when. You're going to, I think what you're going to see is you're going to have actors now, you know, if you're Christian Bale, he should go and get himself cyberware scanned right now and grab that data. And so in 40 years, when he's Christian Bale that looks more like Orson Welles, he, you know, he can say, but I want to play, you know, Batman era.
But you say Christian that, Bale. But I mean, you know, when they did the new Arnold Schwarzenegger for the Terminator, they in fact discovered that the life cast and stuff had nowhere near the kind of skin resolution that they needed for today's technology. I mean, being serious for a second, like, that's going to happen. You're going to, 40 years from now, you really think that a cyber scan from now is going to cut it?
I think if you had a, if Christian Bale went in, got himself cyberware scanned, and had a photographer, you know, a VFX level soup photographer walk around him and take, you know, nice 15 megapixel pictures, close ups all over his entire head, so that you had an ear that's 15 megapixels, you know, you, I don't care how good technology gets. That's going to be good enough information in order to create a digital Christian Bale.
Well, I think you've announced your new company.
No, I've no urge to photograph people's ears. But
I just have a, I think that we would be sitting here if he did that, criticizing him as being the most arrogant actor of his generation for presuming. But hey, you know, if we were back in the days of studio pictures where we actually had actors attached to studios by studio contracts, back in the days of Katharine Hepburn and stuff, and yet we had today's technology, I'm sure that's exactly what someone at a studio would do. But
well,
that movie Looker with Albert Finney in the late 70s, early 80s is essentially about that.
And that was a good piece of technology for its day. Didn't that have Susan Day in it?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought Susan Day was a babe in L.A. Law. God, I love that.
Yeah, she's got nice eyes.
There's a test, though, that Image Metrics did with, I'm forgetting the studio who actually did the final rendering. I want to say it was Framestore or MPC, but don't hold me to that. But they took Marilyn Monroe, and they replaced her face completely with a digital Marilyn Monroe that had been built, delivering a different line of dialogue and comped it in there. And you are going to see that, and you are going to see that very, very soon. You're going to see – we've already had Fred Astaire dancing with a vacuum. You're going to see, you know
I'm not arguing with you, and I totally agree. And but you yourself hit it on the head earlier when you said we're just not at that stage yet where that's a plug-and-play, press-the-button –
Exactly.
Position.
We're not at plug and play, but we're at the state where, you know, that technology is within sight. You know, it's maybe 5 years, 10 years down the line. So if you're a 25-year-old actor now or actress now, especially if you're an actress, you want to have that. There's no harm that can be done by having that information with you, because you want to be able to own it. You know, to own what your young self looks like.
Can I point out two shots that I really liked?
Yeah, one
being visual effects and one not. The one that's not a visual effects is when they show Bruce Willis in his room as a human for the first time, and he takes off the goggles or whatever. He has a wall of albums and a record player, which I immediately was like, that's great. That is perfect. That says so much about his character right there. I really like that, which, you know, maybe it's super subtle, but when he went on to say he wanted to be, he didn't want to use his cigarette so much, made sense. But also when he went to visit his wife at her job and basically get into an argument with her surrogate, and she just turns off in the middle of an argument, I thought was great.
Actually, I think that whole sequence with the face, pulling off the face and...
Yeah.
And her freezing, I thought, yeah, you're right. That was a whole sequence that just worked really, really well.
Yeah.
So in wrapping it up for this week, my position is certainly that I enjoyed the film. I'm just not going to be rushing out to buy the DVD because I'm never going to get over Bruce Willis's face. But having said that, I think there's outstanding work in some of the scenes that, you know, you need to get to appreciate what the visual effects artist did, in particular the helicopter crash, the stuff with the freezing at the end, and a lot of these other things that we've talked about. A couple of shots in there that weren't really up to scratch, but on the whole, I think David summed it up with this kind of missed opportunity thing. But you know what? I think that there are shots, if you were to put them on your reel from this film, would be absolutely, you know, completely brilliant shots to have on your show reel. Maybe not just every shot.
No, I agree. There's definitely some winners. You know, if you were to make a reel, yeah, you could pick some really nice stuff to show your work. That's about it.
And David.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's unfortunate that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So it's we're obviously going to spend our time talking about what bothered us rather than what we liked. So I concur completely.
So look, thanks so much for being on the show this week, guys. On the Twitters, Jason, we should flag your Twitter feed, because I'm certainly a follower. It's Jason Diamond, all one word. And is that the best place for people to follow you? Or
yeah, more or less. I'm pretty active there. And my website, mbsproductions.com, which is like Monkeys Buy Shoes Productions.
And
Jason's also in a fantastic band, which
really?
Is available in iTunes. And I highly recommend picking it up. So
that is Eloise and the Savoir Faire.
Really? What style of music is that?
David, could you interested in a third party
punky funk? It's very aggressive but funky rock music. Feel right at home. It's I don't want to say it's timeless, because that gives a certain kind of thing, but it would feel fine in the 70s, but it feels fine today as well. It's really good stuff. It's very happy music, actually. It puts you in a good mood when you're listening to it.
Sort of like, I guess it would be like Blondie meets Devo, kind of.
Ah, well, I'm so going to check this out. So that's on iTunes?
Yeah.
And give us the name of the band again.
Eloise, like Eloise and Abelard. Eloise with an H, and the Savoir Faire, like Savoir Faire is everywhere.
Excellent. And David, you're still on the Twitters and posting away, I presume?
I'm on the Twitters. I'm posting on my blog, which I updated finally, Mr. Seymour giving me gruff. And I actually just did an appearance on the Page podcast talking about visual effects and screenwriting and how to write for visual effects artists to read and how visual effects artists read a script. So you can listen to that there. And the script pages, on my blog, there's a collection of script pages from iconic visual effects movies and how they describe kind of iconic visual effects sequences to read and enjoy. So you can grab that at davidskrupinas.squarespace.com, because the internets hate me and won't let me reroute my site right now. stupid technology. So there you go. So I'm on the Twitters as at David Strapinas. So.
Hey, Jason, is Trash Rats and Microphones, is that you?
That is my album, yes. I play bass on that record.
Okay, very cool.
We have a Twitter feed for that, for the band, which is Eloise Tweets.
Ah, cool. Okay, well, you can find it on, and we'll put a link, I think, in the show notes.
Oh, thanks.
But yes, no, definitely worth checking out. Okay, so that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. I want to thank the crew. Maybe, David, you'd like to thank our team behind the scenes here at the show?
Sure. The VFX Show is a joint production of Pixel Core and FXGuide.com. And our researcher is Lori Apport. And our Todd Sultan is also our researcher there. So we thank them both. And as always, this is the VFX Show signing off.
Yes, and if you'd like to follow the show on the internet, we're at Twitter as VFX Show, and of course over at VFXShow.com. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time. Bye.